This is the AFL Show, part of the Mojo Sports Network.
Alrighty guys, hello everyone and welcome back to Mojo Sports Network. It is your host Maggie O'Connell once again, and I'm joined by Yuri and Alan. Nice to have you guys back. We are going to review round one. We'll start with Carlton v Richmond. Now, what a game that was. I'm going to handle this one over to Yuri.
It was a close game, I have to say that, Maggie. It was hardly fought. It was tightly fought, shall I say, as well, too. And the Tigers, to their credit, gave a lot of pressure. And that was to be expected as well, because it's a very unknown about Richmond this season, too, where they finish bottom four. Who knows? It's very hard to get a read on, right? But yeah. I think for Carlton and seeing what they were able to do in those tight games, because a lot of the criticism for the last couple of seasons with the Blues is they lose the close ones and they still can't figure out how to overcome it. But we saw last year, right, the back end of last season, that tight win over Melbourne by 4 points, beat Gold Coast in Gold Coast by 4 points. And of course, those two finals, they beat Sydney by kicking and Melbourne by 2 points. And it just goes to show that the maturity of this group in the last 24 months has evolved to a team that can now contend for a premiership. And it wasn't pretty whatsoever on Thursday night. And even that last quarter there where Charlie Curnow had that, well, you can say that mishap air kick and should have gone back and just had that shot from the top of the goal square and that brilliant tackle from Nick Flossner to deny it. But it's those sort of learnings, I think, for the Blues moving forward that's going to hold them in good stead. And we saw, of course, Adam Cherry didn't have he had a very quiet game. He only had the 15 touches. But when you look at Mitch McGovern, this is just one thing I want to point about McGovern too, is that he's going to take so much of the pressure more offside and Zach Williams off halfback. And people don't realise this as well. He's not just an intercept defender, but his first point of thought when he has the ball in his hands is, I'm just going to go straight down the middle. Bullseye, bow and arrow, right-footed kick to a teammate in the middle. That's his first instinct. And that was so telling, especially in our first half. And when you look at his metres gained at the end of the day, 595, which was, I think, the best on ground too, and definitely number one out of all the Carlton players. He's that real sort of, you wouldn't want to say barometer, but just that X factor of half back there. And he's just a really critical piece there too. But that last couple of minutes, just to finish off, that was nerve-wracking. That was almost just chew your fingernails, right? The Tigers were coming hard. The ball was in there attacking 50 in the last 30 seconds, and you're just thinking, don't give a free away or just a ruck infringement in the ruck contest. But Tom De Koning's game was just off the charts, right? Kicked that telling goal in the final quarter, took a number of big intercept marks there too. And this was always going to be a big year for TDK after what he showed in last year's finals and that game against Melbourne, which he kicked those two goals. And it showed right on Thursday night. And Richmond shouldn't be disheartened one bit whatsoever too. I think Adam Uzay in the press conference was really highly praising of his players.
Yeah, no, Richmond definitely came. I mean, they had to show some fight after the first week. I mean, that the first half against Gold Coast was quite disappointing. And I think it probably got caught up in the moment playing against Hardwick. But so that last sort of six quarters of football have been sort of back to sort of brand, you sort of understand that Richmond is. But seeing that they're still looking at that Uzay model, there's that sort of discrepancy between whether they can combine properly for the full four quarters. Because they had times where Carlton was just dominant with McGovern intercepting that back half. And that probably was compounded the fact by, especially the injuries in the first half where your two key defenders go down. And that sort of means that Bolter has to play back. And then he's just got left with Lynch up forward, who battled manfully, but him coming off a whole year off, they're then having to compete against, you know, young McGovern single-handedly. It was never going to be the aerial presence that we sort of needed. And that definitely was telling towards the end. But to go down with three players and to lead for Prince 75% of the game was a very proud effort for the Richmond Football Club.
100%. A win's a win, right? So with Carlton, they are now sitting 2-0. So obviously they're happy campers over there. But with Wietering, Walsh and Martin, they are soon to return. So they are in great shape. I don't like to say it, but they are in great shape. As you said, Alan, brave effort by the Tigers, though. They were missing three players down after halftime, which is, you know, fantastic fight till the end. So Gibkiss with his knee reco is really devastating. Really devastating. He was in my super coach, so I'm really sad about that. He obviously most missed of last year as well. So they need to find a tall defender for Gibkiss. So I'll love to see how they go about that as well.
Yeah, I think it'll be Miller most likely.
Oh, 100%. Now, moving on to the Pies v Swans. What a game we had. The Swans are looking deadly. They looked way too quick for the Pies moving the ball. And I think they were just too quick with their ball movement, led to the Swans by taking 19 marks inside 50 compared to the Pies with 9, which is not like Collingwood. So it was fantastic seeing McDonald kicking 4 and Heaney, my super coach again, he can just keep doing great things. Heaney and Warner resting 4, kicking 5 between them, which I thought was a major difference in the game. And what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, so I mean, Heaney's first 2 weeks have been outstanding. I mean, I think sort of going in, you thought like a couple of injuries, you know, Mills is not playing, Taylor Adams is not playing, that you're probably thinking that the Swans midfield is going to be a bit weak. But the fact that they can just now throw so many numbers through there, and Heaney's just showed that he's pretty much almost a permanent midfielder now. I mean, his best football, quite frankly, has been these past 2 weeks. And I think it was a stat by, I think, at Champion Data this week showed that he's first 2 games have been up there with the likes of Dusty Dangerfield, the start of the season, Gary Ablett. Well, that's the company he's rubbing shoulders with now. So he's really stepped forward. But they just got this all good balance now between their ball movement. Like Nick Blakely off the back half has been fantastic as well. And that connection between sort of their forwards too, with like McDonald start to really shine. I suppose coming out of that Franklin shadow has probably been helpful for him so far this year. But they've got that connection that's really, really shining through.
I think for Collingwood too, Alan, and this was something I was really telling after halftime, is they tried to switch the ball to the outer side wing and they just kept faltering and the plan just ultimately crumbled for them. And it's unlike Collingwood because they want to get speed on the ball as well. And we just, as the game progressed, it just became really telling that Sydney's leg speed, Errol Goulden had, I think it was what, 650 metres gained, and Nick Blakey, as you mentioned too, he had 649 metres. They just completely just carved them up to shreds and they almost just looked an absolute shell of themselves, the Magpies, which was just, it's really just unfamiliar territory once again too for the Pies, and them and Brisbane sitting 0-2, which we'll speak about shortly as well. But it's sort of, do you sort of raise and probably smash the alarm bell and ring the changes in the way too with what's happening, or do you just really persevere and stick through? Because this is definitely times of uncertainty at this stage, and what's to come as well, that big Thursday Easter clash between the two teams right next week.
Yeah, no, I mean, right at the moment, you're probably not panicking too much, but all it takes is 1 or 2 extra losses, and then it's quite, you know, striking just how much of a fall off quite quickly it's been for Collingwood. But it's their next 2 games though are pivotal.
But the difference with Sydney and Collingwood as well is that Sydney, their skill execution is fantastic. Errol just coming off half back. You've got to shut that out. How did Collingwood not shut down Errol, especially in that second half? He is kicking the footy inside 50 most majority of the time. You have to be, I mean, that would have been, you know, definitely brought up in the conversations, definitely, of shutting him down. But I think he's just an absolute weapon for Sydney. And I think he might be, I don't know, my opinion is he could be a Brownlow contender. I don't know. That might just be me, but I love the way he goes about it. And he's very young as well. So I'm really excited to see his future.
Yeah, well, it all comes down to the pressure in the end. Collingwood's pressure has been lacking quite a lot.
100%. Now, moving over to my Bummer boys. We got it done on the MCG, which was fantastic to see. Now, solid win for the Bombers. A bit more bullish with the ball, I think, was the reason why we got home at the end. I think the Hawks goal kicking, the Wizard trying to do too much. I think he could have centered the ball a few times. He tried to be the hero a few times. I know he's very excited with his debut, but I think you should center it, Wizard. Now, Archie Perkins with 24 touches, 8 clearances and 2 goals. That is fantastic. I'm really excited for his future, definitely. And also, lastly, the Bombers do lose Zach Reid with a hamstring. He's just one of those players that just keep getting injured, unfortunately. But the Bombers to bring in Parrish, Ridley, Draper, Hobbs, and maybe Dylan Shield the next week or two is going to be exciting. So I'll give this one over to you, Yuri.
Yeah, I think Hawthorn definitely pushed him a long way, though, too. And probably was that last quarter, of course, that determined the outcome of the game. And Hawthorn weren't shamed one bit whatsoever. Yes, the inaccurate goal kicking, 11 goals, 17, ultimately hurt them at the end of the game. But they did a lot of things right, though, the Hawks. Josh Weddle, his run we saw last season, you just put him off halfback, put him on the wing. He'll just run, run, and run. And you don't know exactly where he's running to because that's just who he is. He'll just go full blaze out and find his teammate. And that's the real excitement if you're a Hawthorn supporter, too, is him. And I just see just a lot of upside with the Hawks. That's the thing, though. And with Essendon, I think this is probably something that they're going to have to address, especially playing against Sydney, is
Oh.
loose checking. You can't afford that against Sydney. We saw that last year when the teams met in round nine. The Swans, shall I say, just absolutely pummeled the Bombers into thin air. That can't happen Saturday night. If it does, then it's a 7-8 goal hiding.
Yeah, I'm not excited, to be honest. I don't know if I'll watch it, but maybe I will. Moving over to the Giants v North Melbourne. What a strange game. I mean, 39 points was probably a little bit flattering for the Roos. Do you agree?
They had moments like though. Their ball movement still in the first half, especially their second quarter, is actually very good. And they made, the most of their opportunities. So they've got some good things, but eventually their defense though was just leaking so much against the Giants. And then they were just able to do as they pleased.
100%.
Yeah, completely agree with that as well too, Maggie and Alan. And I think this is just really telling that Orange Tsunami in waves right from the outset was on. And Tom Green, and you don't normally associate Tom Green being sort of the runner in a way, but there was one particular passage there where he was on the end of one of the handball chains, and I think it led to a Callum Brown goal early in the first quarter. And it's just the weapons they've got. It's going to be so hard for teams to curtail this season, and they can go gears, man. They can go from first to fourth gear within 5 minutes. That's the telling part, right? It's the old Giants team of the 2016, 2017, 2018 era, right? Where they're just carving teams up for fun. And it's pretty much what it is once more, the Orange Tsunami and Jesse Hogan having another great game to start the season. And yes, Toby Pink in his first game, mature age, 26 years of age. And it was always going to be a daunting task for him going up against the former 2015 NAB Rising Star winner. And he just showed, right, that these last couple of seasons with Jesse Hogan is that he's basically back to his best. He's away from the football media spotlight, if you want to use that term appropriately. Of course, being in New South Wales where it's heavily NRL dominated base, and it's just helping his footy a lot, right? And I think my prediction is he'll kick more than 50 goals this season. He's already got 10 majors already on the board. He had a career high 49 last season. He just looks in ripping nick, right? Aerially, in the air and on ground. His presence is super commanding.
Yeah, there's also the fact he's got absolute weapons around him too. I mean, you've got Cadman's emerging every week now. He's getting better and better. He's taking more contested marks. You got Green at his feet. You've got kind of Dan. I mean, you got Daniels there. You got Plus Brown. I mean, it's a quite a formidable forward line. It's going to the seed. You probably thought Adelaide was the best forward line, but looking at how well this group is connecting, you're always thinking that the Giants do. But it's not just their forward line, their midfield. You've got to look at their back line too. I think. Was it Taylor and Buckley had they've had a combined 22 intercept possessions. Like that's the quite frankly the best defensive duo in the game right now. They just don't have any weaknesses across the whole line.
100%. I said it last week. Jesse Hogan, he's just ready to explode. I tell you, with six majors and now with 10, as you said, Yuri, he is leading the Coleman and in ripping form. So he maybe be smoky for the Coleman, maybe. But I do love the way that the Giants are definitely playing through him. They have full trust in him. He has the confidence. They're up and about. So when Giants are playing good footy, Jesse Hogan's playing good footy, it's happy days, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
All right, now moving on to the Cattery. So tough win at the Cattery for visiting teams, obviously. Good defensive game expected with Ross Lyon as the coach. Good to see the new Joel Selwood stand open. And I have to throw this in there, but you have to duck to get in. So I'll leave it at that.
But
That's a
that
nice
also,
one.
yeah, it's
Yeah,
a very good
good
one.
one. But I'll handle over to you, Yuri. What did you think of the game?
Yeah, so I was lucky enough to watch this game too on KO and just how the game eventuated. Both teams had numerous scoring opportunities, butchered themselves in the foot, right? 10 goals 16 to 9 goals 14. And I think also just try to remember the NAB Rising Star, the Rising Star winner as well for the round two. His name just, I think, slipped down my mind as well too. But Ollie Dempsey, that's right.
Ollie
And
Dempsey.
he was big, 3 goals in the game as well, just provided a real spark there up 4-2. And there's been a lot of raps for him as well in the preseason and how he's tracking there too. And the young midfield nucleus at Geelong have now got to, and Patrick Dangerfield leading way as he did, right? That big goal in the last minute of the game to put the result beyond doubt and when it was much needed. And it's well documented with Dangerfield's inaccurate set shot goal kicking. It's just been that one weakness that he hasn't been able to overcome for his stellar career. But when the opportunity mattered most, he delivered. And Geelong, they're going to be hard to really figure out as well this season. They'll win their fair share of games at the Cattery. Teams, of course, over the last 17 years haven't been able to win there in terms of conjuring 2-3 wins at the venue, unless you're the GWS Giants. But it just really showed, right, that these youngsters that they've got too, and even Max Holmes had another really good game too, and he's really burst out in the last 12 months, that there's big, bright futures right there for the Cats. And St Kilda shouldn't be disgraced one bit whatsoever, because they've had a tricky time playing at GMHBA Stadium. They haven't won there now for 25 years, and there were signs there for the Saints, though, that they can take. And I think Liam Henry was okay too. He copped that big knock as well in the contest, and I think that was late in the first half and he was able to come back onto the game. So they're not disgraced one bit whatsoever, the Saints. There's a lot of learnings that can take away from it too. And, of course, tomorrow's big game against Collingwood, the MCG. But it was definitely a big tick on the right path as well for Geelong.
Yeah, so the one good thing for St Kilda was when they were able to get past that Geelong defence, because Geelong defence was one of the things that sort of unveiled was they were pushing up so much higher than they did previously. So they had almost like a four-line back line, then plus one keeper at the back. But that sweeper at the back was still pretty much on the halfway line. So they'll really press up quite high. But you wonder to see how that goes for Geelong, sort of the bigger grounds like the MCG. Again, they sort of struggle with the defensive there. But, I mean, when they could play Adelaide over this week, they should be able to still hold that high press. But whenever St Kilda broke through that line, they were able to score very efficiently. And that was the one good thing. So when they got through, they had a quick ball movement. It was quite, you know, damaging. And especially I would like to see how that goes on the fast, you know, Marvel deck and the MCG open spaces. That's going to be good for the Saints. But also I'd like to sort of shout out to Max King's game too. He played up quite high and he had a number of, he had his career high 10 score involvement. So he's hitting some good form. Let's just see how he goes against probably Collingwood this Thursday.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, isn't it? I can't wait for that game. Now on the sunny Gold Coast, don't we love it? Well, it wasn't sunny, was it? But a good win for the Suns against a team who I think might be fighting definitely for the top eight spots. So I thought the Suns really pulled through. A bit of a scare late though. I was a bit scared. I was sitting on the edge of my seat. But they just did enough to hang in there. So I thought Rao was outstanding again with 9 clearances and 20 contested possessions. So that was just outstanding. And I thought definitely the weather, the rain definitely made perfect conditions for him. So Alan, what did you see of it?
Yeah, I mean, this was a pretty dour game with the torrential rain. But that Gold Coast in the first half was, that midfield is just so dominant at the moment. I mean, they made Richmond look second rate. And then against the Crows, Crows could only score one goal in the tight first half. I mean, they did lapse towards the end at moments. They thought the game was dead, and, you know, credit to really Rankin, et cetera, getting on top. But they're just, there's something, got a bit of mojo about them at the moment, and they sort of have that synergy. And that sort of midfield group between Rao, Anderson, and now Tuke Miller is really starting to shine through. But they've still got a great defensive network too, and that sort of Hardwick mould is starting to really sort of take shape. So they're definitely on the improve.
I think Dimmer will have had some heart palpitations right in the last 2 minutes of the game, watching that big three-quarter-time lead just dwindle before his eyes. But I think they're quickly adapting to his game plan. And those wet conditions suit Damien Hardwick's teams anyway. That chaos footy that Richmond played under him. And we saw that on Saturday night too. And Adelaide are sorely missing Tex Walker, that's for sure. When he only kicked 3 goals to 3-quarter time, and it just wasn't that impact right. They just couldn't get themselves into the game and ultimately left their run too late. And when you're playing in slippery, treacherous conditions, right, it takes a lot of out of you. So that was always the ongoing concern, I think, for the Crows going into this game. And yeah, it's just, they're hard to read. I've got them finishing just in the top eight. We spoke about this in the very first episode last week, 8th on the ladder. But again, they're hard to figure out away from home. That's just going to be the key question.
Yeah, you know, at home, they're going to, you know, play extremely well. They played that Adelaide Oval brilliantly, and they're going to be hard to beat. But they only won 2 games away last season. They need to get that to 4 wins to make sure they make that top eight. And the game against the Gold Coast Suns, I mean, they have the opportunity to do so, but they don't, you know, put their best foot forward, which is obviously disappointing. So hopefully there's something they can rectify throughout the year.
100% agree with that, guys. Moving on to the D's and the Dogs. So I thought the D's definitely bounced back and were too good for the Dogs. But the question is, was it an advantage for the D's to have played a game already? I mean, for me, it looked like it was, but I'm not quite sure. Maybe the AFL have to dive deeper into the whole opening round type of thing. But I definitely thought, though, Max Gawn bounced back. He was best on ground, obviously. And I thought Jack Billings was fantastic in his second game for the footy club. So I thought, yeah, the D's were outstanding. Petrarca, Oliver, I feel like they got their mojo back. And it's great to see Oliver. Did you see the, I saw it on Twitter, I think, Simon Goodwin and I think Oliver, yeah, they had a great little moment on the bench. So they hugged it out. I thought that was really fantastic to see. And I'm so glad he's out there smiling again. So that's fantastic. I'll handball over to Yuri. What did you think of it?
Yeah, just those first 5 minutes, the Dogs were really up and about. They kicked the first two goals through Jamara Ugo-Hagan and thought, well, the Dogs are going to stick around right for the whole game. But Melbourne have had their absolutely number these last five contests. They've won four of their last five contests by an average of 48.75 points, should I say. And it's pretty telling that the Bulldogs' lapses, riots, or just skill errors. There were a number of skill errors during the game, which ultimately led to goals. And I think just telling was that final one where it was that kick smothered at the top of the goal square and Christian Salem was on the receiving end of the handball and he was stellar all game. And his new role, right, is inside midfielder once more. And I think he played that role probably, I think it's what, 2016 or 2017, somewhere around there. So they've just got, that was a big bounce back anyway for Melbourne. The synergy going inside 50 was far better. You could tell right away the connection with their midfielders and forwards, that was spot on, including that, I think Van Rooyen's pass to Cozzy Pickett in the left forward pocket early in the first quarter, which Cozzy led up hard to take that mark and ultimately went on to kick that snap set shot for Trulli. And I think it just really embodied that whole connection-wise, the connectivity that they were able to conjure. And even when the Bulldogs got within 17 points on that Lockie Bramble goal early in the final quarter, you just never really felt Melbourne were going to be that seriously challenged. That was just in my point of view, right? And those hot conditions, 30 degrees again for the second consecutive day in Melbourne, definitely played its part, but Melbourne were the quicker ones to adapt and adjust to those conditions and they just completely just ran the Bulldogs off its feet. And there comes to a point as well for the Dogs as contributors. Who else is apart from Treloar, Bontempelli, Liberatore? It's another glaring point, right?
Yeah, no. On the Dogs, I mean, they were just sort of, they were able to match inside 50s, contested possessions, clearances. But well, I think one of the stunning things was pressure acts. The top six of the top seven are all Ds. They just weren't putting in that effort. That defensive pressure, especially in that last quarter, they pretty much just put up the white flag and they just weren't able to run out the game. But towards Melbourne, like they just look like a better team with Cozzy in it. Cozzy's such a dynamic player. He is that X factor that allows them to, I suppose, be a bit more creative with Petrarca. I mean, Billings was fantastic. His inside 50 work was definitely something that the Ds need. But is that so much to do with Dees improving it because they've been something they've been lacking for the last 2 years or the fact that the Dogs just had no pressure whatsoever? And as well, with that defensive network, that back six of the Dogs is just, I mean, it's like David King and the SEN sort of bringing up. The fact is they've got Jones back there, but who else? You look there, you go, Ed Rich is a good player, but there's nothing else. There's no defensive. I think the last few years they're ranked with the North Melbourne and West Coast with able to get the ball off the opposition. They just can't turn it over. And you've got players like Sam Darcy in the twos who can't get a game. You should be playing AFL football. But they've got so much tall forward that then they've got no pressure on the smalls, so you can't then control the ball movement. It's just a lot of big questions about the Dogs this year.
Yeah, do they have enough depth? That's probably the question. Now, moving over to Adelaide, Port Adelaide v the Eagles. Now, I thought Port were really professional by winning by 50 points. I thought Harley Reid, he's obviously been on the paper, he's been in the paper pretty much every day. But Harley Reid, I thought was great for his first game with 16 touches. I mean, is he worth the hype? I don't know. I'll touch on Ivan Soto. So he is my cousin's partner. So he's part of the family. So I've got to, you know, hype him up as much as I can. But I thought he was fantastic. 14 touches, 27 hit outs and 2 goals. So that's really fantastic for him. But if Charlie Dixon can stay fit out there, watch out. Port Adelaide are going to be deadly, I reckon. A very high contender for that flag. So Yuri, what do you think about the Port Adelaide v Eagles?
Yeah, I'll just briefly sum it up quickly, Maggie. Yeah, they had to do what they had to do, right? And where they was win by 10, 11 goals, end up winning by 50 points. And the number of scoring shots, though, they had, what, 40 scoring shots in the game? They kicked 16 goals, 24. If you reverse that around it, they would have ended up kicking 24 goals, 16, and the margin would have been 110 points. But they just were just completely dominant. And West Coast, I think Adam Simpson in his presser spoke about just the inside 50 supply. They couldn't get enough of it. I think they only had 40 entries going inside 50, which is just, it's not enough to win a game unless you kick a goal with half of those entries. But Yeah, it's just going to be a lot of growing pains for the Eagles. Everyone knows about that. Port Adelaide, everyone knows they're going to be a premiership contender. They'll win their fair share of games at the Adelaide Oval. They've been doing that for the last decade since they started playing games there in 2014. So that's pretty much just the brief synopsis in a way too of how the match occurred.
100%. Dockers v the Lions. Wow. I tipped the Lions. What am I doing? I should have just tipped the Dockers. Should have gone with my gut. But good win for the Dockers, though. We'll just quickly, briefly run through this. Sarong with 46 touches was unbelievable. I love the way he goes about it. The Lions without Lachie Neale. That's the real thing. Lost the clearance 22-13. Even with three players down after halftime, they still dominated the Lions. So I thought that leaves both grand finalists from last year 0-2, which we'll touch on shortly. And the Lions conceded 8 goals straight, the second week in a row. So, how do you guys think about that? We'll just quickly wrap this up, but I'll just jump onto Alan. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's just not the same team as the finish in the year. Maybe it's just a case of I mean, it's an extra game last year where you're up for so long for such amount of time. You have a short preseason, you're starting a week earlier this year too. That preseason conditioning might not be there for them. But at the moment, their pressure level, same with Collingwood, it's just not evident. And the getting bashed up in that midfield was extremely tough. I mean, the Strong's game was huge. But, and I mean, between the Dockers too, like, they were just able to dominate that midfield, but whether that's... they're not going to get that dominance though throughout the whole year. So I want to see how that sort of transpires throughout the year. But yeah, the Lions are just, at the moment, they're just a shell of their former self.
100%. So now moving on. So both grand finalists are 0-2. Who would have thought, honestly? Who would have thought? But I think, I really believe that they'll obviously bounce back. I mean, they're very both professional clubs. They're very... the way that they were moving the ball last year, was fantastic. And I think they're definitely going to get back to their best. So no matter what, I seriously do truly believe that. But to see them winless, though, is a bit weird. So, Yuri, what do you think about that?
I think if you're a Collingwood fan, right, being 0-2, I think there's one probably pointer. I think that's probably plays a, if you want to use the term, significant part. That's Nathan Murphy's absence down back.
Yeah.
Because so much of it goes on Darcy Moore. And I'm about to put out an article tomorrow on one of those pointers, and that's exactly it. Because he marshals so much of that intercepting game, just allows either he can go on the opposition's key forward, he can play as that second tall defender, he's very good aerially as well, he's a very good kick. And when you minus him out of the equation, and Charlie Dean, who has missed the first two seasons of his AFL career due to reoccurring foot injuries, it's quite a lot of pressure for, even though I think what Dean's 22, 23 years of age, to have that amount of responsibility placed on your shoulders when you only made your debut, right? It's hard to, second game, rather, should I say, that's hard to overcome. And just that whole marshalling and lining up of their back six is what Murphy provides. So that's just a Collingwood point on them and sort of that real significant absence. But for Brisbane, concentration lapses. Consecutive weeks in a row, you concede 8 goals. You sort of almost have to ponder your structures. Do you get too laissez-faire in terms of you have a comfortable lead, you can sit back on your shoulders, rest on your laurels, and then all of a sudden teams will get on the run, just like the Dockers did with their clearance game. The inside 50s was so telling right early in that second quarter. It was about something 23-9 in Brisbane's advantage. And through Sarong, through Brayshaw, through Fife, it just completely reversed the whole outcome of the clearance domination in Fremantle's advantage. And the inside 50s eventually evened up, I think, pretty much close to 50-50. But it's that other part to it as well, minus Lachie Neale. There are a lot of passengers, a lot of pedestrians for Brisbane. And Josh Dunkley, yes, he might have had those 26 possessions, but they didn't quite slice through like knife through butter, right? So for a Brisbane point, Chris Fagan's bemused, perplexed. You can use those words. We'll just see what happens right after the two teams buys and how much they can really rewrite the canvas back on the ship.
Yeah, so the one thing we'll know is that the next 2 weeks are going to be telling for these two clubs. But to reiterate your point, Yuri, about Collingwood's defence, currently they're ranked 17th for defending the back 50. That's just not a premiership model at all at the moment. And that's a large part is that Murphy, missing piece. But there's just the pressure between the two. You touched laissez-faire with Brisbane. But Collingwood too, there was a footage of just seven players just basically just jogging through what Well, the opposition's had the ball running down the wing, going full tail, but they're just not chasing as the same level. But we'll get to see, especially come that, you know, Easter game against Brisbane Collingwood, where some teams, whether which team's actually going to be able to sort of get back towards, you know, pushing towards that eighth position.
It's going to be very interesting, isn't it? I'm very excited to see if they bounce back. So I've been seeing all over social media the hangover, and it's kind of, yeah, funny to see Collingwood still fighting too hard. Now, with round one, we don't like to see it, but tribunal results, there's been 4 cases. Now, Sicily, $2,500 fine. I mean, sure. I mean, Andrew McGrath did come on SEN and he did say, I don't even have a bruise. I have nothing, which is sportsmanship. But I'm also like, maybe just keep your mouth shut. You just never know. But with Mason Redmond, I don't know if you guys saw it, but he got 1 game. So I don't know. I don't know how I sit with that. I'm an Essendon supporter, but I don't know how I sit with that. There was really nothing in it, to be honest. But I mean, you want to stamp it out of the game. So obviously they're giving him 1 game, but I just don't think I agree with that too much. And obviously with Harms, with his headbutt, equals 1-1 game, and also Roses as well with his headbutt, which is 1 game on the sideline. So what do you think of that, Yuri?
Yeah, I think with the Sicily one, he tends to be a recidivist in a way too with the tribunal and his actions. And we saw last year at Brisbane game, I think the MCG, which Hawthorn won, and he got, I think, a 3-week suspension or something for a dangerous tackle too. And I think it just comes down to players' tribunal records and how they're sort of representing the media as well. And some players are painted in a negative light and others are painted with sunshine and roses. But yeah, I thought you're lucky enough to get away with that, to cop that $2,500 fine. And having watched a couple of those replays, I think you should have at least probably got a match. That's just my opinion on it too. You want to cut those incidents out. There's no need for it as well. Yes, there's white line fever in the game too, but you've got to learn how to control your emotions in those situations.
It was 90 seconds into the game and he basically tries kicking a bloke.
Yeah.
To get away with $2,500 fine, I think, is very lax.
And then you look at the Mason second one and you're like, well, how's that one match? And Sicily is, it's very confusing. I don't know. I don't think Mason Redmond should have got a game, but that's just my opinion. We'll move on to some really exciting news. Obviously, Tasmania have come out with their jerseys, state jumper, not their main jumper. But I do like the colours. I like the logo. Obviously, there's a lot of comments around it. Alan, what do you think of it? Because I don't mind it.
No, I think it's great, to be honest. I mean, I think the AFL's needed Tassie for quite a while. And I think it's just great. You look at the support around now. I think it's been 48 hours and they've got 125,000 people signed up for their $10 membership, which is, you know, huge. So there is a lot of support both in Tasmania but also around the country for them to have a team and to show their colours. I mean, I think the logo looks great, and also their jumper being sort of their traditional one, they just had a bit of flack, but there's something beautiful about having the old traditional jumper. You think about Richmond, Collingwood, Carlton, that old jumper. Why don't we have the same pull towards the Tassie one? But they'll have something a bit new, a bit more vibrant coming up later in this year, no doubt, but it's just good to see them come in, and it's quite positive. Just hopefully the election towards getting the stadium across the line goes ahead.
It was about time, that's for sure, too. Having a team in Tasmania, we've seen many great Tasmanian players forge their way into the AFL. Jack Rewalt, Matthew Richardson, just to name a few. But yeah, just the whole sort of investment that they've done to bring this Tassie team across as well. And I think the jumpers look great. That's my opinion on it. It stands out. It stands out as to what Tasmania represents for. That's the thing. When you look at the jumper, you look at the colours and you think, yep, tick the box, tick another box, and you're good to go. And now we have to wait, what, 4 more years until they enter the competitions in 2028? So, and considering the immediate garnering of support in terms of the last 48 hours, as you touched on too, Alan, I think it just speaks volumes for the amount of popularity that this will bring to the state.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be big. I mean, I can't wait in the future to have a holiday down Tassie, watch a game, and spend a couple of weeks there. I think so many people want to do that. So I think it's gonna get a lot of popularity.
Yeah, can't wait to see what players will be wanting to go down in Tassie. So that's gonna be very interesting. I'm really excited to see that. Now, Alan, you've got some injury news.
Yeah, yes. So obviously this week's been some quite a big injuries across both my Richmond and the Freo as well. But coming through today, you had Oscar Allen for West Coast going down with a bone bruising his knee for like, I think like 6 8 weeks he's going to be out for, which is not great for a young rebuilding club to get their captain go down. So this is sad to see because he's quite a good player and very important for them.
Fantastic. Now, preview. Round two is coming up. We've got St Kilda versus Collingwood. MCG, Thursday night blockbuster, 7:30. I'm really excited. I'm really excited to see if Collingwood do bounce back. It's going to be interesting, as we chatted before, but I do think truly Collingwood will bounce back. I think they're just, you know, obviously the ultimate professionals. I mean, they're all professional clubs, but obviously if I'm being, you know, premiers last year, I think they're definitely got to bounce back. And I really think they're, definitely going to win by a fair margin. So that's my prediction. So Yuri, what do you think of St Kilda v Collingwood?
I think it's going to be a pretty open, expanse game at the MCG with the two teams as well. I think the Saints want to definitely run and gun a lot more too when you bring across Liam Henry from Fremantle. That's definitely one of the plans that I think Ross Lyon teams haven't really been known for playing a fast tempo style of game. It's more in congestion and try and seek as many stoppages as possible. But for Collingwood too, we're going to see a lot in the first 5-10 minutes of the game. Defensive intensity wise too, how much they want to cover the ground for their teammates, how much they want to sort of want in terms of tackling as well, how much of the quick ball movement transference they can get, because as we touched upon as well, that second half they tried doing against Sydney and it just ultimately crumbled beneath their eyes. So I definitely see the Magpies answering the call. By how much, I don't know exactly, but I think they should have enough to get the job done.
Yeah, I was start of the season, I'm bullish on St Kilda, and I'm just looking forward to seeing them get the chance to use their ball movement off that half-back line in the open expanse of the MCG. And if Collingwood don't have that, don't bring that increased pressure, they will get cut open. So if Collingwood don't bring it, I expect St Kilda to win, actually.
I just hope it's a really close game. I hope I'm sitting at the end of my seat and I hope St Kilda win also. But we're going to jump on to Friday night, Adelaide v Geelong. I think Adelaide definitely will be favourites for this round, but I truly think they'll get over the line pretty comfortably. So yeah, Adelaide Oval is going to be fantastic. Friday night under the lights, 7:40. It's going to be fantastic. I can't wait for this game. But I just truly think Adelaide are going to be way too strong. I love the way they're going about it at the moment. And I think, yeah, I don't know. Geelong is an interesting one because I don't think they're going to be in the top eight. I just don't think they're just quite there yet. They're just, yeah, dropping off. So I think Adelaide will be way too strong. So yeah, Alan, how do you sit with this one?
Yeah, I tend to agree. Adelaide at home are very dominant and you expect them to win. You expect probably throughout the whole year, they might only drop one or two games at home. They just play that ground so well. Now, it'll be interesting how Geelong's defence, whether that high press is able to thwart some of the Adelaide ball movement. But I think their midfield should just be able to get over top of Geelong's young brigade. And I think they should be able to just get the job done.
Speed-wise.
Oh, you go, you go.
Sorry, Maggie. Yeah, speed-wise for mine, for Adelaide, that's going to be a key part as well to get traction on the ball. And the other part to it as well is the tagging role. Ben Keys, we've seen him play tagging midfield roles, tagging forward roles. Does he go on Tom Stewart perhaps as well as a defensive forward? Does he go on Patrick Dangerfield in the midfield? There's a lot of interesting questions to raise about that.
Do you go on Max Holmes? Maybe.
Maybe. I think Holmes is going for speed, though. That's the only concern if you're Adelaide coaching staff.
Too quick. Who can catch him, honestly? I think I'd pull a hamstring if I tried to catch him. But anyway, so Saturday afternoon, Marvel Stadium, the Roos and the Dockers. So the Dockers are obviously favourites, but I don't know how this one's going to plan out. Hey, it's a really interesting one, but I truly think that North Melbourne are going to get over the line. So I think they're just going to continue to just be bullish and just, you know, keep driving these young kids through. And I think the only way they win over the Dockers, I think just pressure, skill execution. But again, don't know if it's going to be there. They're a very young side. But I do love the way, though, that the Dockers are moving the footy. The way that they played against Brisbane was outstanding. So, yeah, Yuri, what do you think about North Melbourne?
I think they're going to be competitive the whole way. I think that's the one thing that they've got in their disposal is that competitiveness as well of a young group. And of course, we've seen with Luke Davies-Uniac and Harry Sheasel down back, he's continuing to play off half back this season. And also with Nick Larkey down there too, last year's common medalist, they've definitely got the tools to push the Dockers far. And that's the thing though. And I think on the Fremantle perspective as well, is those pressure forwards. And they came to a fore last Sunday against Brisbane. Michael Frederick, Sam Switkowski there, Tom Emmett, who was big for Peel Thunder last year in the Waffle, and Michael Walters there. If that quartet absolutely brings the pressure game, which they always do week in, week out, it's just going to be a little bit tough for North to exit their back 50, because this season for the Kangaroos, you're going to see teams rack up 60 to 65 inside 50 entries a game, and it's how much they can hold the fort for how long. That's the only question too. I think the midfield's going to be really intriguing in that aspect too, just how they stack up as well, and just some of those really close matchups and what they do with Caleb Sarong, because last week, right, he broke that club record, 46 disposals set by Peter Bell and David Mundy. And that clearance game of him and Brayshaw was just dynamic as. That's the only concern, is if Freo Abigail on top of the clearances, as they did against Brisbane, it may be a long day. But I see this game probably being, three or four goals in Freo's advantage.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I see Freo doing, getting the chocolates here. But it'd be interesting to see how North can, they're definitely trying to go through that corridor a lot more. And if they're able to do so, they can score quite well. So it'd be good to see. You'll get a good indication between both of these teams, that's for sure.
100%. Now, the MCG Saturday 4:35 should be a great game. I'm actually really excited about this one. Hawthorn v Melbourne. I can't wait to see, again, what Hawthorn can do. So I know obviously Melbourne are favourites for this game, but I'm actually really excited. Hawthorn didn't play too bad against Essendon. They just couldn't kick straight, really, and execute. So I just think that Hawthorn, and they've got a lot out as well. So it's really exciting to see. And obviously the Wizard and Jack Inovan down there as well, and Warple just playing some freaky footy. But I actually can't wait for this game. It's going to be fantastic. I do think Melbourne will get the Chockies though, but I'll love to see, just a fight from Hawthorn. It'll just be really interesting because it'll just show their character and what they got. So I'm actually really excited about that. But Yuri, what do you think about this one?
I think this is another good litmus test for Hawthorn's young midfield against the experience of Melbourne's midfield. Contested possession is what Melbourne thrives on. Everyone knows about this for the last 6 years with them. They win contested possession by more than 10, then it's an automatic guarantee that they're going to win the game. So if you're Hawthorn, you have to be aware of that too. Clearance game as well. They also have to be aware of that as well, because with Clayton Oliver, Christian Petrarca, Christian Salem now, as we've already mentioned, playing in that inside midfielder role this season, Jack Viney, and Tom Sparrow, you can rotate through there. It's a deep midfield Melbourne have got too. And I think just for Hawthorn is just be daring, because Melbourne will just clog up that defensive 50 with May and Lever. They'll just put themselves in the right spots at the right time. They'll go off their man and help defender to spoil or just intercept mark. You've just got to really be meticulous in where you pick your inside 50 targets towards if you're Hawthorn. And at ground level too, just they've got pressure like crazy to just lock it in Melbourne's back half. And that's where, with Jack Ginnivan and also the Wizard, Nick Watson, you mentioned too, if they're able to do that for a long period of time, they did it, I think, the second last round of last season for extended periods, then they're going to be right in it. And the two games last season, they definitely showed a lot of mantle and a lot of resolve.
For Hawthorn, they're a good young side, but coming up against experience and the big bodies that Melbourne midfield, they will struggle. I mean, the Domas have gone too. I think he was back to his best last week. So, I mean, it's for Hawthorn, I think it's going to be a bit of a long year, but I mean, they definitely got some talent. So there's a lot to look forward to for sort of Hawthorn fans.
Definitely. They've got a bright future for sure. So Hawthorn fans, sit tight because it's coming. It's coming. But talking about sitting tight, Sydney v Essendon. I don't know if I watch it. I will watch it. But like SCG, Saturday, 7:30. Yeah, I don't know how we're going to go. I think Sydney are just on fire. They are just incredible to watch. I think they just have full trust in each other. They love that front handball. And I think they've just got great skill execution, just the basics. And I think they're just doing all the basics right. So I love watching their footy. And obviously I'll be watching this one because it's v Essendon. But I think we just have to just leave everything out there, honestly, because Sydney are just great. And obviously the SCG as well. But I think we just definitely have to shut down, especially Errol Goulden as well. I said that before, shutting him down. Don't let him kick inside 50. That's for sure, because he'll just lace out, hit on the chest. So same with Nick Blakey as well. But it's hard to shut everyone down, I guess. But I think if Essendon were to win, I think it's just pressure, 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 locking that ball inside 50 and making sure, you know, we execute when it's inside our 50. So it's not ping pong all day. So what do you think of this one?
I think this is going to be a great game to get an indication of how Essendon's going to defend. Because obviously that was the biggest weakness for Essendon last year, is they would defend that back. The ball movement from defensive, you know, from defensive 50, you know, it was able to just leak through so much. And also sort of key defender of Ben McKay. I mean, he had a really good game last week against Hawthorn, where he actually showed a couple of key intercept marks where he said, yes, this is it. But against Sydney's ball movement, it's going to be another level, and we'll get a good indication if Essendon's going to be able to start competing against the top eight teams properly and take that next step, or is it going to be a bit more of the same where they just, you know, flowing with the flow and just having an occasional good game against the top eight side, but then having lax moments where they just can't defend that back 50?
I think as well, the smaller dimensions at the SCG, and of course Sydney playing there pretty much every second week, is just, they just completely run you off the floor in the way too. And we saw Nick Blakey last year, right, in numerous games, one against Carlton. I think he ran past two Blues players. One of them was Adam Chera, who's not the quickest, but it just demonstrates, right, once they get through that middle, they switch the ball back there and it's Blakey on the receiving end of it. He takes a couple of bounces. That's the particular area the Bombers have to stop, right? And who they do tag onto Blakey, well, do they go over defensive forward matchup on that regard? Possibly so, because as Maggie, you point out too, you can't tag either Goulden or Blakey both at the same time. That's just too hard to stop. And it's just, this is the other thing as well with Essendon, is how they sort of work their way around the smaller confines, right? Picking out those targets and not butchering every single time. The other part too as well is not having concentration lapses on their man and leaving guys alone inside 50 for uncontested marks. They've got to cut that out early. We'll see again those early minutes of the game, if they're right up for the challenge. If they are, then it will be close, hopefully. But it's the Bombers, though. It's unpredictable with them. You don't know exactly what you're going to get from them from the week-to-week basis.
Yep, I know too much about that. So, and I'm also scared of the SCG, never going there again, because the last time I went there, I think it was Rampy climbed onto the post, should have been 50 and wasn't. So I'll leave it at that. And I also think I went to the Gary Rowan game as well, so where he kicked that. So I'm done with the SCG. But moving on to a Sunday afternoon, it's great to kick up your feet. We got Sunday footy back, obviously, with round two, Western Bulldogs v Gold Coast. It's going to be very interesting. Mars Stadium, I'm very excited with this game. And it's going to be interesting with the Gold Coast Suns and seeing how they're going to battle with, you know, guys like Bontempelli. But it's going to be a great mix with the two midfields coming together. Obviously, the Gold Coast Suns have, you know, guys like Matty Rowell running around and Noah Anderson and Tuk Miller. There's, I can name it all, but also the Western Bulldogs are very dangerous as well. So I think Jamari Ugohagan, I think he's ready. Just have a blinder of a game. I know it's very early in the season, but I think he'll take a few hangers on the weekend. So I'm really excited. Yuri, what do you think of this?
The conditions down there are very blustery. They tend to get very windy at certain times and it brings about unpredictable football in a way. And I think visiting teams who've travelled down to Ballarat have just haven't been able to grasp the conditions all that quickly. And one thing I'd love to see the Bulldogs use a fair bit more, and they did it so sporadically with Tim English playing him as a forward. And if they can just rotate between him and Rory Lobb and just somehow try and wear down Jared Witts, that's the one thing they've got to try and do. You got an advantage right there if you're the Bulldogs with two ruckmen. You can just, again, alternate between the two of them for whether it's 7-10 minute periods in the ruck or up forward. So they just use that to advantage, then that can help. But also too is just how they defend the Bulldogs. They're usually really good defending at Mars Stadium in Ballarat, and that's okay in itself. But the whole Gold Coast pressure game too, with what they brought in the first couple of games, they really apply that hot kettle on the Dogs, and they sort of can get really found out. And we saw that last week against Melbourne, that once the heat was applied onto them, they just couldn't handle it. And that's just my sort of talk about as well, with what the Dogs need to do, what the Suns can do, and we've already seen it, right? The clearances. The Dogs are normally a pretty good clearance team. That's the other thing. I think they can really get on top of as well. Liberatore there, he can easily get 15 clearances a game. Likewise, Bontempelli. Those two just get opened into the chains, and it's going to be probably Bulldogs' advantage anyway.
Yeah, this will be a very good game. I'm actually looking forward to watching this game. For the Dogs, it's a game they just have to win. I mean, if they don't, but the thing is, they rely so heavily on, I think, Bont and Libba, that if they just get beaten by Raoul, Anderson, and Tuke, and Flans to an extent, in that midfield, I don't see them winning at all. Because against Melbourne, their ball movement wasn't great, half-back line. I don't feel like they've got a second plan. They've got a plan B. They've got to win the midfield to win the game. And now Mars is conducive to winning the midfield, winning the game, because it is blustery. You get territory. You win the clearance. You get that forward half game going, and you lock the ball in. But the way that Raoul in particular and Witts has been so dominant, it's going to be very difficult for them. So it's going to be an extremely close game.
Yes, I'm very excited. It should be a great game. Richmond v Port Adelaide on the MCG Sunday at 4 p.m. I'm very, very excited for this one. Obviously, Soto going up against his former team in the Tigers, which will be exciting. But I'm really excited for this one. But I just think Port Adelaide are way too strong. They've got a great midfield. I mean, they're great all around, you know, from their defense to their forward. I think, yeah, it's fantastic by the way they're going about it. But they love the MCG. So I'm really excited to see how this game will pan out. So I don't know. I think Richmond are just, obviously with the injuries as well, I think they're just a bit behind, unfortunately. But I think, yeah, Port Adelaide will win comfortably. So, Yuri, what do you think about this one?
I think last week definitely answered a lot of the questions for Port Adelaide with their back line and having Brandon Zerk-Thatcher there and Asava Radiga-Lea, and it all doesn't have to come down to Alia-Lea. And yes, it was only against West Coast, and yes, it'll only be this week against Richmond, but you don't want to be so cautious. You want to take a cautious approach, though, if you're Port Adelaide. And as what happened last week, which the Tigers stretched the Blues all the way to the final siren, only to lose by 5 points, there's still a fair bit of snarl, if you want to use in that term, with the Tigers. They may not be that dynasty team anymore, right? But they'll definitely be competitive for longer stretches of time. And I think it might have been last year's game at the MCG. They were pretty close until the last 5 or so minutes of the game, and Port ended up winning by 10 points, and both teams, yeah, kicked inaccurately. I think it was 10 goals 17 to 9 goals 13 or something like that along the scoreline. But I just see this game being close. That's just my sort of observation on how it sort of pans out too. And I think Tim Taranto was really good last time the teams met too. I think he had 33 disposals, I think, by memory.
Yeah, which, 33 yeah, to 4.
Yeah, he had a big game as well. And that was probably his best game as a Tiger last season. And I see him having a big game once more. And just, yeah, it's going to be close.
Yeah, Richmond's at the MCG. It's going to be hard to beat. They're not going to get that many wins, but they're not going to get blown away. And you saw that against Carlton. They've got a tenacity to stay in games, and they've still got enough talent to, you know, take it up to the best teams. Whether that be like, not they're going to do it for the whole four quarters. Not going to get the win. Not going to score 100 points. But that talent means they're not going to be a walkover. So the biggest thing is going to be how they're going to fill that. The two key defensive tools going out. You know, Gibbs being lost the whole year's huge, and it's quite sad to see him go. You know, being a Richmond supporter, so we're hoping to see him have a good strong season this year, and he go down the way he did. It was heartbreaking, but it will give the opportunity to someone like a Brown, Precise, he got a couple of games last year, to hold a spot, I think, and maybe Miller as well. But that back six, though, I don't think will be able to compete, especially with Dixon, too much. So, I mean, I still expect Port to win, but it will be a lot closer than probably people probably expect.
Hopefully the Tigers get up for you, Alan, that's for sure. But we'll wrap it up with the last game of the round, obviously with Carlton and Brisbane with a bye. So West Coast v GWS, Optus Stadium at 6:50. GWS will just run them off their feet. That's just, I'm really excited. I'm actually excited to watch this game because, again, I'm excited to watch Harley Reid. A lot of hype about him, but West Coast at home, their fans will rock up. They always will rock up. So, but I think GWS are way too strong. I think Hogan, again, is ready to, I reckon he might kick 10. What's that pain? I think, he's ready to kick 10. Nah, he won't kick 10, but he's ready again to you know, to kick a bag. So it's going to be exciting for him. But I think they're just too big in the middle. Don't you agree? You know, with Green running around as well, they're just too big in the middle. And I think definitely West Coast are just going to be chasing tail all day. So Yuri, how do you think of this one? And we'll wrap it up.
I think just to be short and concise, they'll just, as you've already mentioned, Maggie, too, just the whole run and gun. That's pretty much what's going to catch the Eagles out. I see West Coast being competitive with their intensity of tackling. That's for sure. It's how long they can sustain that pressure for. That's the thing. And eventually you feel as though that damn wall will just burst and the Orange Tsunami will just run in their usual waves anyway through the middle of the ground. So I just hope that isn't a three-figure hiding. That's the only concern. But if you're the Giants too, you still don't want to treat as though it's just a stroll in the park anyway. We'll get the 4 points. You still want to play with that sort of that real combativeness too, which they already do already, the Giants. They can mix it up from playing really rough and tough style of footy to that open space and just carve teams up. So, yeah, I see a Giants winning this by, if I was to make a prediction, probably 11 to 12 goals, I think.
Yeah, it's quite crazy to think that the corresponding game last year, West Coast won, to see how far GWS have come since that point of time. To think that where they're going to be pretty much a 10-goal to 15-goal better side is just how stark that improvement's come in such a quick time. But, yeah, I'm sort of dreading this game because I actually do think the Giants probably will get dubbed up by 100 points.
Yeah, you're probably not wrong there. So that is a wrap. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, Mojo Sports Network. Thank you for joining episode 2. Make sure you subscribe and follow our socials on all platforms, Mojo Sports Network, AFL. And, yeah, thank you so much, Yuri and Alan, for joining us once again.
Thank you, Maggie. Thank you, Alan.
Yeah, thank you, and enjoy.
No bombers.